This is Kim Newton, writer of The Forecaster, number 163. You're listening to The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
White puzzles with no pictures would be infuriating to me as well. Welcome to The Blacklist Exposed. I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. I have a premonition that this is one of my favorite episodes of the season so far. It's not really a premonition if I know that, but whatever. Thanks for joining us once again as we discuss number 163 on The Blacklist, The Forecaster, which aired January 12th, 2017. It was written by Kim Newton and directed by Edward Ornelas. Show notes and other intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com.
Before we get going today, just a quick moment here. We want to take mention of one of our Blacklist faithful out there, Lulu. She is a sweet, dear woman. She's just dealing with some medical issues right now, and we just wanted to kind of gather the Blacklist community together to say, you know, we wish you well and hope everything is good for you. And as you deal with some of the things that you're dealing with right now, I know it's a really tough time for you, Lulu.
Yeah, I definitely, we want to extend our thoughts, prayers, whatever you do, whatever you believe in or whatever, she could use the help. So best of luck to you, Lulu.
Last week, we answered my profiling question of the week, which was, how will Liz thank Red for the pardon?
Kind of disappointed you guys didn't get naughtier, but oh, wait, you did. Okay, so first off, Adrian says, a really nice Father's Day party.
See what you did there.
There you go.
Karen said, Liz bends over a desk and lets Red spank her about 20 to 30 times.
There we go.
I think Karen was watching The Secretary recently.
50 Shades of Red. That's what that was. Davina says, with a single red rose and a bottle of Barolo. Mm. How about whiskey? I like whiskey better. A little Crown Apple, little Jack Daniels or something.
I was going to say, you're more of a Jack guy, so.
I am. I do like winter Jack is here. Oh, God. I'll never leave my house. I'll just sit there with a bottle, sad, watching Blacklist all day.
Stacy said she will be grateful but suspicious of his methods.
Priscilla says she straight out tells him, thank you. At least I'm hoping so. It's time she does. Ooh, snap.
Anita said Liz will let Red hold Agnes for an entire half an hour.
Really? You want to barter with the kid? That's, I don't know. I don't think parents do that. Henry says, brown chicken, brown cow. Get it? Do you get it? Do you get it?
Tori said, role play. She will be a sassy FBI agent. He will be the criminal. It all ends up in the bedroom.
Always somebody has to take it dark. Crystal, by accepting his protection to keep Agnes as well as herself safe, also to say thank you because that's what you do when someone does something nice for you.
Rachel said, by giving him the recipe to Chewie's pecan pie that she stole from his diner while on the run for the cabal.
And finally, Marilyn says, that's a tough one. I'll say she gives him a get-out-of-jail-free card from Monopoly. And then at the end of the series, when Liz has Red in her gun sights and says, you presume to decide what was best for me, he can pull it out and be saved. Psych! Wish Kate had one. She technically did. I mean, she did kind of get out of that.
She did. She did. Mm-hmm. With a creepy tracker forest man. Ugh. Leon Rippey. What an interesting guy. Mm. Thanks as always for the great responses. What is your question this week, Aaron?
Yeah, I don't want to set anything up for naughtiness. It's pretty straightforward. Was Dembe's decision at the end of the episode, was it an act of betrayal?
Mm. Seen this novel before. We'll have to see what happens.
He's going to get shot and left in the woods?
Maybe. Mm. It would be really sad. He gets shot, and it's back in that room that Red found him in from the Mombasa cartel.
Oh, my God, man. Stop.
It's been quite a dark week for me.
I guess. What the hell's going on with you? I don't really care. It's one of those things you say to people. I don't really care. I'm sure you're fine.
Still standing upright. That's all that matters. So with that, let's all enjoy a tall glass of chocolate milk as we discuss this week's case profile.
All right, dioramas keep popping up in front of Liz Keene's door. That's weird, right? I would freak out. Each one seemingly foreshadowing an eventual murder or death. The first leads us to Trisha Culpepper, who was a judge murdered in the exact same way as shown to Liz in her diorama. I do want to point this out for people that were confused, as I was originally. If you're confused as to what a diorama is, because several times I thought it said diem, which is kind of like, why would you have a wine cork at your door? That's weird. So a diorama is a 3D model. It's illustrating kind of, usually a historical event. They have them a lot in museums and whatnot. They also use them very often in movies and TV for special effects or animation.
I could actually clarify that even further because my daughter just did a project and they had a choice between doing a diorama or a 3D model. And the difference is that a diorama actually has a back and sides, where the 3D model is actually more freestanding. And there was a difference because the 3D model was actually 20 points more in credit than the diorama.
Really?
It was.
See, this is how you do this, kids. When you don't care what somebody said, but you want to make them feel like you care, you go, really? Just for all the kids playing at home. There you go. No, good. What grade did she get? Did she get an A?
Oh, yeah. It was really good. We actually...
Did you do it? You didn't do it for her, did you?
I showed her how to make the people stand up, and then she did all the work.
Okay. Because I hate those parents. I don't hate. I dislike those parents that sit there and do the whole thing for them and say, here, turn it in. That's not your kid's homework.
Nobody got time for that.
That's right. Earn your keep, kid.
That's right.
Okay. So what we think is a... Oh, I guess I should ask. What did you think? Because we kind of were back on a blacklister pattern with this episode. And, you know, very much we steered away from melodrama. You know, the first half of the season was our first quarter of the season. What is it? Third? Whatever the number, the percentage is. The first part of the season, we were very much focused on the melodrama and the internal struggles between our cast. This was really more of a blacklist-centric episode, which I don't think we've had in a while. I love this episode, by the way. What did you think about kind of going back to the roots, so to speak, Troy?
Absolutely fantastic. I loved it sitting there the whole time, and I'm like, oh, it's the forecaster and Maggie, and she's like predicting all these things. And then big twist at the end, Maggie's not the one. That's the forecaster. Wow, didn't see that coming. So that was kind of fun. And it's really great because Kim Newton, who wrote this episode, she's a big pun person. Mm-hmm. So usually you're obviously replacing a word with a different word to do the puns. And so she literally pulled one over on us, thinking that, okay, forecast could mean this, but it meant forecasting the stock market, as this guy Farnsworth was really trying to predict how he could actually make a bunch of cash. So good on that.
I really like that. You know what I like most about this is it had some of that unsettling mood. That
really,
you know, early X-Files.
She's Maggie. She's nine. I was like, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, this is creeped out. It was very that unsettling mood, kind of like from the early X-Files episodes, where you had that. I don't know what's going on. Where is this going? Is it going to go supernatural? Which I'm really thankful they didn't, because this is. I think the show has enough going on. You don't need supernatural thrown in the mix too. But I like that. For a minute, I was like, well, I guess we're going to have psychics now. All right. We'll see how this plays out. And then it ends up being there's a scientific solution, which I thought was great. So love this episode. I had a lot of fun, man. And it was great to just kick back, relax, enjoy the ride for an episode. I didn't have to pay a super amount of attention. It wasn't a matter where you got to keep notes or anything for doing the podcast. Really, it wasn't, because it was very much focused on the blacklister of the week.
Right. And then it gives you just that one little nugget at the end that ties it back into the overall mythology, which is fantastic.
Not little nugget. That was a big nugget.
Big nugget.
Yeah. That was a tall drink, a glass of chocolate milk nugget. What that was. Mm. So what we think is a killer taunting Liz, which is a real TV and movie trope. And that's kind of what I thought was going on, actually. And I'm sure most of us did, gets turned on its head. And, the supernatural thing is not a supernatural thing. It turns out to be a hearing aid a little girl wears named Maggie is tuned into the frequency of a hitman who is taking out targets and announcing all the details on the phone. Apparently, he really thinks these details out, and he likes to discuss them with Farnsworth in detail. But the little girl, she thinks it was all a matter of premonition, as well as her mother does.
Well, that's where I thought the supernatural thing was still coming into play a little bit, because those models were so detailed. I mean, how mm-hmm. is she going to know that a plane is going to hit this mountain and have that much detail about it?
That part is really true, because even if you're discussing the details, I mean, that's really detailed.
Yeah.
Like, I could get...
We're going to crash a plane somewhere around the Andes, but you don't know where the plane's actually going to go down specifically.
But if you hear, you know, we're going to sabotage the plane, it's going to hit a mountain, that would work. And that's what she created. You know, it doesn't have to be, I think maybe we're looking at it overly detailed, but if you really look at it from that perspective, in the mountains, I mean, that's really all that 3D model looked like. It was just a plane hitting a mountain. That's it. Mm. So there you go. I think it's completely plausible. Is it a stretch? Maybe, but it worked. I had a lot of fun with this episode.
So it wasn't until the second time, though, when the judge in the beginning, like, I was trying to figure out like how she died. Like, she just seemed like she had a heart attack, and then they actually focused on the glass on the table. And so obviously the person was there and gave her some kind of poison or something that stopped her breathing.
That's what it seems like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure somebody probably is already writing, just like last week. Mm-hmm. You know, they said in that newscast that the president actually pardoned him. I'm like, I didn't hear it, man. I listened three times, but good on you.
I was listening to the song that was playing over it. So that's why I missed it. The song was good.
This song is good. The show always has great songs. Well, Fiona Driscoll is the mother who has been leaving these dioramas, and she's busted by fingerprints, so no master criminal here. That should be their first clue. Obviously not a master criminal.
And I actually enjoyed that they wrote in the concept of her chatting with Liz, because I'm like, I saw you on TV. I'm like, why would you go to her then if you know she's a killer? And then they explained, well, it's someone that obviously knows about being wronged and the pardon, mm-hmm. and... So I love that it's all kind of tying together, because otherwise I would have been like, why are you going to go to her? She's a criminal too.
Yeah. Yes, it's a stretch. It's also a TV show. It worked fine for me. Yeah. I had no problem with it.
No. I'm just glad they wrote it in there. Otherwise it would have been an issue, right?
She's just like tracking. Hey, you look like somebody who appreciates killers. So here you go.
I saw you on TV, and I saw you at the grocery store.
Yeah. And then I followed you home several times, and I'm wearing a hoodie. And apparently she can sneak in that. You would think after the first one, they would maybe, I don't know, plant like an FBI agent at their house.
Maybe have a peephole in the door at least. Maybe get one of those new finagled video ringer cell phone doorbell things.
Maybe a camera, yeah. Something. Yeah, because it's going to be kind of hard to mask carrying that giant model up the stairs.
I think they got some resources, you know, either between one group or the other.
Something. Well, now we're picking it apart. Let's move on. All right. So her daughter, Maggie, is the one who actually thinks she's having premonitions, and the mom believes so as well. And because the FBI gets involved, really, Maggie is then targeted by the hitman, Benjamin Charnquist, who's the guy who's been killing everybody. The forecaster, it turns out, as Troy alluded to earlier, is not Maggie. It is Chris Farnsworth, CEO from Jasek Financial. And his final plan is to hit his own company and a money launderer by using the speed method, mm-hmm. which is cut the elevator and let it crash. Thankfully, between Wrestler being a crack shot and Liz, they thwart the murder, but Farnsworth gets away. Do you think he's going to come back at some point?
Well, there was that awesome foreshadowing of, I'm looking at all these kids' toys, and oh, there's a picture of a family. Like, that that doesn't set up anything specific. The only thing that I couldn't tell, though, was it really did look like the girl in the picture was Maggie a little bit. And I kept
did.
You know, is this the dad? Is it something else? Are we supposed to pay attention to this? So I don't know if that's something specific that we'll have to keep an eye out for, because I love when blacklisters are still on the run, because you never know when they're going to pop back up.
I don't think it's the dad, because he had no problem taking her out or ordering her hit. So, yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think it was a hit, though. They just wanted to kidnap her and stop her from...
Is that how you took it, huh?
Well, they wouldn't kill a kid, man.
Why wouldn't they?
It's broadcast TV. It's not cable.
It's 9 o'clock. They kill kids at 9 o'clock. That's a rule. It's after 8, it's okay to kill children. I think Yeah, that's a rule.
Yeah, okay.
It's in the NBC memo. I got one. You didn't get it?
No, they don't like me anymore after picking on the promos.
I don't blame them. God, you're so whiny. All right, so let's get into the character. Is there any more about that overall plot you want to talk about? Because it actually kind of was a really cool Blacklister of the Week, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I think it was very interesting to, like I said, have the misdirection. I think it gives it that sense of what's really going on in Blacklist thing. Obviously, we haven't even talked about the whole other side, which we'll get into more with Red and the characters, mm-hmm. With the mind and stuff. So it was interesting to find out how the forecaster tied again back into the overall concept of the Blacklist, because even Red said, the killer's taunting you. You're being brought into a game. And he assumed that the dioramas were from the killer directly, too. So another blacklist where we didn't have Red fully in the awareness, which ties back into Dembe's, like, I don't even know him anymore.
I got a question on that, but I'm going to wait until we get to Dembe.
Okay.
So, remind me to whatever my question was, because I'll probably forget, because that's what I do. I'm old.
Yeah, thoroughly enjoyable. This was kind of the episode I thought we were hoping we were going to get last week. It's exciting. It's fun. You get engaged again with the show, and then boom, sets a big storyline for the whole season.
Yeah, it was a really fun episode. I really, really, not that I didn't enjoy last week's, and especially, like I said on last week's show, it's last week's was better when you rewatch it, when I think you take your expectations, check them at the door, and then rewatch it. But this one was very much a
fun,
you know, just woo. Yeah, just straight fun episode, and you don't have to invest a whole lot of emotion and intellect into what's going on. It's just follow the ride. That's all.
You bet.
Let's get into characters, Troy.
All right. Music's up first, as always. In a super adorable scene, Tom unpacks and sets up the apartment while we hear him sing What I Like About You from the Romantics to Agnes. Aw, daddy.
Before he abandons his child.
Yeah, exactly. Passport to foreshadowing, people. The only other song, Alone, from the Dark Horses, plays as the team saves the latest victim from an elevator crash while Red inspects the new cleaner's work. At a very white and beige apartment. Oh, my goodness.
I like that song, but all I kept thinking was, man, you know, Billy Idol did a song called Speed for the movie Speed. If ever there was a time to use it,
this would be the place.
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed. I would love to hear some Billy Idol crank up. Oh, well. Okay, well, going into the rest of the characters, and by the way, I'm going to add Alone to my Spotify list. I really like that song.
It's already added to the Blacklist Spotify playlist and also our Apple Music playlist, so you can find those at theblacklistexposed.com if you want those links.
Well, I definitely wasn't trying to get a cheap plug, but that works.
Sure. Yeah.
All right, so still no Kaplan. Nope, no Kaplan actually present, although her presence is felt throughout this episode. Would you agree?
Absolutely, 100%. When they said cleaners, I was like, oh, snap. This is going to get interesting really quickly. And then, of course, when Red uses her at the restaurant over the foie gras, that it was really a foreshadowing.
Wait, at the what?
The restaurant while they're having the foie gras.
No, okay.
Foie gras?
It's a fancy
foie
word.
Foie gras?
That sticks me. Also, I want a dollar from you every time you say 100% from this point forward.
You got
I think
it.
I can retire by the end of this podcast.
100%. I'll buy you a beer or a Jack.
Sweet.
Then we'll have this. I like because it's almost like it's set up what we were kind of talking about, where Liz or not Liz Kaplan goes into like the background, and we don't see or hear from her for a while. And is she doing things that are for Red, against Red, setting her up to kind of be the big bad for this part of the third of the season? And it kind of seems like that's the way it's going. And if that's the case, that's kind of cool that we picked up on that.
What's we? You didn't think it was going to go that way. I said that. That's the way I wanted it to
go. You wanted her to be a villain.
Yeah.
Like, I still want her to be good, but the concept of her being the big person for the third is both our ideas.
Well, not necessarily villain. I don't think villain is the right word. I think opposition to Red.
Thorn in his side. They're both
villains.
Yeah.
A threat. And now Dembe might join that threat. I can't wait to get to him, man. He had very little, but man, his storyline is all people are talking about right now. So,
ooh, yeah.
What? All right, Cooper and Samar didn't get a lot to do this week. They had a lot to do last week. Samar's obviously, she seems grounded now that Liz is back in the case.
Yeah,
did you get anything more from these two this week?
No, not so much, but I thought it was interesting that all four of them were actually out there trying to stop the motorcycle accident. But did you notice that Samar was not with Wrestler at Maggie's house?
Sure did.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
She's been grounded.
Desk job. Sorry, Samar.
That's what happens when you do treason during your normal business day. Can't have that. Can't have that. But we didn't get a whole lot of them. It was really, they were just kind of exposition machines this week. You know, a lot of characters. Got to do what you got to do. So Tom, moving on to Tom, he's a good dad for like 8 minutes. And then he runs off chasing a bad guy. You know, abandoning his child. How did you feel about that part of it? Because as a dad, we're both dads. As I'm watching that going, you just left your child. Maybe you should get a spinoff.
Yeah, you just had the entire cabal running after you and Mr. Solomon chasing you down and all of this stuff. You know your mom's out there. You know your mom snuck into the hospital and held your child, you know, back in Susan Scotty Hargrave episode. And you just going on the hall is one thing. Looking down the hall, yep, I can't see anybody. But you go all the way downstairs, go down half a block, and then go, oh, crap, what if it was a diversion?
It's like, oh, maybe I left the stove on. What happened?
I forgot my child. Damn, I forgot my keys.
I like that they had that, actually, because it kind of showed that he's not quite there yet. He's not perfect daddy just yet.
No, and it really did build into the story arc for him for this episode, but the whole, should I leave my passports in the garbage? It's really hard to leave that life behind. So it did tie into the overall concept of what they were trying to do from a character flesh-out perspective of he's really struggling between, do I do what my instincts do, which is be the international man of mystery, or do I have to now assume this role as the father? And then that's exactly what we see with this episode, as goofy as it was.
Well, I think he's more torn between, do I do the Blacklist proper or do I do the Blacklist spinoff? And that's really where, you know, he's trying to decide.
Crap.
And
which
I think that's going to be decided for
today?
Him. So we'll see. Liz lets him keep the passports, but we're going to talk more about that when we get to Liz. Going on to Wrestler. Wrestler, he doesn't get much more this week in the way of story, but he is more prominent in the episode. So, you know, Mr. Doing His Job is doing his job a lot more. You know, he's back with Liz. They're partnering up again. It's Mulder and Scully. I was so glad to see these two back together again.
Super excited. Super excited. I think it's going to be some fun conversations between the two of them, especially when she has to start being like, well, you know, Red's kind of going off the rocker, according to Dembe. What should we do? You followed Red for a long time, Wrestler. And they go back to those conversations from season one. I think that's going to be a really fun time if that happens.
And that shot he takes where he puts the gun through the window, through the hole in the window, and takes that shot.
Oh, that was so good.
That was cool. Billy Badass. Loved it. That was pretty badass. And a hell of a shot, because if you've ever fired a firearm, that is a hell of a shot with a pistol. So good on you, sir.
Well, at least he knocked out a small hole in his glass because he knew he had to go through two panes of glass to get there. So he was thinking. He's a smart guy.
He is a smart guy. His hair didn't move either the entire episode. I checked.
Yeah, it was a long climb up those stairs. Be sweating, man. Just
nope. I didn't even see a drop.
Wipes his forehead and the hair goes bam right back into place.
Guy's like a statue, just moving from museum to museum, man. Statue. So that's really what we got from Wrestler this week. I gotta tell you, I know it seems like we're zipping through, but I gotta tell you, there was really the character stuff was focused on really three or four characters this week. The first being Aram. Gets back out in the field, earpiece and everything.
Yeah, it's really a fun situation when you see Aram being able to be put in those situations. I was kind of hoping he was going to be more in that gun situation again, you know, with the whole, you know, banana code word and all that good stuff. But
banana.
But at the same time, it was really great to see him. He really did. I hate to say it because we haven't said it in a long time, but this episode really made me feel like he was the marshal of the team from Alias, especially with this whole, like, I remember in the grade school class and it was the post office clock tower. And we learned a lot about clock towers. And then Cooper just cuts him off. It's like, Aram. I was like, oh, such a good Alias moment there. But yeah, no, it was great to, you know, explaining everything, you know, the RF signals and, you know, we're close. They're out there. He's got that really great kind of ominous, like, I'm going to get you, sucker, kind of feel to him, which is really good.
I like that we learned that he went to a psychic and he found out the truth about his poor Dash.
The bunny.
The bunny. Man, I got to tell you, I had a bunny that died, too.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. So this really brought it home for me. When I had a medical stint when I was young. I was in the hospital. And my mom, this is true story, my mom forgot to feed it.
Aw,
she was so focused on me, you know, and single mom, everything. You know, you got to look at it from her perspective. So she forgot to feed it. It sounds horrible. She didn't, you know, she didn't mean to. And for whatever reason, whatever happened, I came back. The rabbit was no longer with us. That's all I'm saying. So I feel for Ron. Like, I feel for the fictional character about his story about Dash.
Well, you don't know if he died. You didn't consult the Ouija board to figure that out. I mean, he was so hungry, he could have just chewed his way out and just escaped.
My rabbit or his?
Your rabbit.
No, my rabbit was dead.
Okay.
We buried it.
Oh,
100% certain it's dead.
When you said it was no longer with us, I thought maybe like your mom took it and hid it and you didn't actually know that it died. And
no, if she loved me more, she might have done that, because I didn't need to see that and think of all the horror that poor thing went through. I didn't need that. And by the way, I want to point out, my mother is a wonderful person. She was just really stressed out. So let's give her, cut her some slack. Just like Aram's parents. I understand.
Mm-hmm. Poor Dash. Pets.
And he is the one who figures out exactly what's going on. Now, I do want to ask you, okay, so they hint at this supernatural angle. They hint that maybe this kid is having premonitions. Which way? Because Troy...
And then they do the whole seance scene about it.
let me finish here, because Troy, you like everything to go bonkers. You go so far off the deep end sometimes, I don't even think you realize that you're in the deep end. Were you hoping this was going to be supernatural, or are you glad they brought it back with science?
Oh, no. It was the minute it happened, I'm like, there's no way that someone can predict the future unless A, they're the killer, or B, the first thing I thought of was that she's just overhearing it. Somehow there's something, either an implant in her brain or some other kind of, you know, radio wave technology. She's picking up on conversations somehow, some way, whether it's, you know, at her school or something. I figured it had to be some way that the signals were getting beamed into her head scientifically, not metaphysically. And when it was, oh, she's got a hearing aid, I was like, okay, good. I feel better. I actually felt better when I found that I was actually right on the idea.
Would you have been bummed if they would have stuck with the supernatural angle?
No, not at all. I think it's an interesting twist. I mean, there's many episodes where strange things of the metaphysical phenomenon can happen and you're kind of like, is that plausible? Maybe. And it kind of makes you think about it a little bit. If it's just completely way out there, then absolutely not. But yeah, if it's a shred of maybe it's a potential possibility, then it would have been a great episode too. But I do like that it was the hearing aid concept, because of then how they have to find her when she gets kidnapped, and they can still use that same concept because they had the walkie-talkies because they couldn't be on their comms. So it made sense. It worked out.
It did, although I'm not going to lie, being as mean and cynical as I can be sometimes, for a good portion of the episode, I kept thinking, well, this kid's not the sharpest tack in the box, huh? Doesn't realize that it's a hearing aid, just thinks it's in her head? You nut.
Well, she can't talk, so that was the key. She's not able to verbalize what's going on, so she's trying to get the message out there. She can't.
I get it. She just write it down? Like, couldn't she write like a little book report? Hey, Mom, by the way, I'm hearing all this crap. I'm pretty sure it's coming from a hearing aid. You might want to get this thing looked at.
Well, how does she know it's from her hearing aid? She's only 9. She's like, I'm just hearing voices in my head, Mom. That's what a 9-year-old would respond.
Maybe you're a 9-year-old. Maybe you should teach him a little better. When I was 9, man, I was doing my own laundry and making my own dinner. I knew I could figure out that that's a hearing aid. Just not the sharpest tack in the box. That's all I'm saying. Hey, Church, good kid.
What if she was born with the hearing aids and never knew that she had them in? Maybe they're like permanently implanted.
Like she came out of the womb with a hearing aid?
Well, from the point where you can actually remember you have a hearing aid in your ear.
You just made it weird. You just made it weird. All right. Well, good on Aram. I loved how he saved Maggie by deafening her. I thought that was a great moment. I'm like, this is so mean and so funny and so awesome at the same time. I don't know which way how I feel about it. I just don't. But it worked brilliantly.
It did.
Brilliant.
I don't know what was worse, the high-pitched scream of the child or the high-pitched scream of the radio frequency. My dog was like, what the heck's going on out there, man? This is killing me. He's like running around in circles, running up and down the stairs.
He's like, turn it up. Turn it all the way up. Like, oh, that poor kid. Oh, Aram is kind of twisted. But then I realized that's the only way to save her. All right, fine. He's not just being mean. Although it would have been really funny. I'd keep doing it. I'd keep turning the knob. That's how mean I am.
It's one way to stop the premonitions from coming once and for all, right? Just blow out the hearing aid speaker.
Or, you know what you do, Aram? You give the controls to Mom, to Fiona, so that every time this kid acts up, just crank it up a little bit.
Okay, now we're going to do our bad parenting 101 with Aaron.
I don't think that anybody in this show can judge me, all right? You had a guy run away and abandon a baby down the street, so...
That's true.
I think I'm in the clear. All right, Liz. Liz supports Tommy Boy. They have a nice talk about trust and spinoffs. How do you feel about Liz being okay with where Tom is in his plight?
I think she has to be. I mean, with all the things that she's done over the seasons, with torturing Tom and then shooting the AG, going on the lam with Red, and then being back with Red, and then the whole she understands the lifestyle now, and because of that, I think she understands it's very hard to, it's part of who you are, and you can't just throw that away. Some of your experiences make you who you are as a person, and I think she understands that those experiences that he's been through is what's actually going to make him a better father in the end, which is exactly what we see when he runs back and goes, "Oh crap, forgot my kid."
Yeah, the one thing when he threw him away and he took him back out, I was really hoping as a viewer that he was going to acknowledge that. He was going to talk to Liz, and because too many times I was fully expecting him to not say anything. Like, this is going to be his secret, and this is how he has his exit on the show. And I'm glad they didn't do that. I'm glad they had a nice discussion about it, because that's what couples should do. And I'm glad that was part of it. If that didn't happen, I would have felt like it was more forced, I guess. This felt more natural to me.
Notice he said couple and not married couple, because they are not married still.
I don't know. They could have gotten the paperwork done at any point.
I suppose they could have, yeah, just gone to the courthouse and...
Yeah, we don't need another ceremony, I don't think.
They've just been busy, man.
They have been busy, yeah. Now, I got to ask you, and this is a... I think it's a fair question. Because you can... We as viewers, because we know the spinoff's coming, we can tell this is kind of leading that way. Does that bother you at all, or are you fine with that?
No, because I think what I'm looking for now is the clues of the how do I get from signpost 1 to signpost 2 to make the spinoff happen. So I'm interested in the story now to see how it's going to progress in order to make it that he could actually leave his child, because now we have precedent in this episode that, oh crap, I can't chase the bad guy. I have to come back to my kid. So that sets up a really good character arc now of how can he justify leaving Agnes to go work for his mom.
Right. And even more so, if that spinoff is a huge success, how do they justify him doing it like 16 times or whatever?
Right.
Or 22 times over the course of a year.
Please not 22 times.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's interesting. We're going to see where that goes. And that's pretty quick, right? Because this is episode 2 since we came back. And I think it's they go 7 and then we're going to the spinoff.
Yeah. And in the 7th episode, it'll be like a 2-hour. So it'll be Blacklist at 9 and then spinoff at 10.
That'd be cool.
That will be cool.
That'll be cool. I hope we get a nice promo telling us that, because I'll probably forget it's on at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock or the earlier hour.
The earlier hour. Yes, yes.
Okay, so back to Liz. So how do you feel? We talked a little bit about them being partnered up, but how do you feel about Liz herself just being an FBI agent back on the case profiling again?
I love the fact that they were profiling and they brought back up her old time at the New York psych department or whatever it was she was doing back then. And bringing those cases in, I thought that was really great to say, yeah, this is who you were, so you need to be thinking about how you're going to use those skills again in your new role, or old role, or regurgitated role, or whatever you want to call it, as an agent. And I love that they're kind of weaving in that past to get her back to where she would be. And she was kind of profiling the mom. She was kind of asking the right questions again. So it seems like she's back to being the agent that we remembered back in season 1.
Yeah,
just a little bit tougher and able to stand up for herself now.
I really enjoy it. If you go back and watch like the first season versus now, her character really has come a long way.
Long way. Like, yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So we have the moment where Red asks her, because Liz, outside of, she was kind of an exposition machine this time herself, you know, not a ton of character stuff because it was very much a Blacklist for the week. But she does have that conversation with Red where he asks if he can come see her new apartment. And she said, not yet, maybe someday. Someday, you caught it?
I did catch that.
Yep. How do you, and explain for people that might not have listened to that, what is someday? What's the relevance?
So we did a podcast for the HBO series Westworld called Beyond Westworld at beyondwestworldpodcast.com.
You shill.
And one of the big lines in there between two of the people that kind of liked each other was that, well, we'll go do this thing someday. And someday means never to the people. So, yeah. So Red can't come over
laughing
anytime.
At it. Yep. Anytime. Not yet. Maybe someday.
Never.
Never. So how do you think she's going to react to the news about Kaplan?
She reacted right there on the spot. She was like, huh?
Yeah, but I mean in terms of going forward. Do you think she'll confront Red, or do you think she'll
Oh, no, she can't confront Red because it'll put Dembe in jeopardy. Yeah, I think she'll. I think this is the way to get her to come back into the fold of Red and check up on Red a little bit more often and come to and need Red more often. And so it's, but it's her doing it her terms, her way versus Red coming to her. So I think that's it's a nice writing technique in order to make the Red Liz relationship. I don't want to say forced, but it's forced to happen because she's trying to keep tabs on him and see if Dembe is on crack or just drink too much chocolate milk or what have you. So I'm good with it.
Do you, in terms of that, do you think she's going to blame herself for it? Like she should blame herself for it because really it was her going into hiding, getting away from Red that caused
Kaplan to die.
It was
Kaplan's idea. Why should
she? I'm just saying, but you don't think she's going to wear that guilt?
You got to feel a little guilty about it, but at the same time, it was Kaplan's idea. So it's not like if it was my idea, like, Kate, can you help me? Then it's a different story. But it was Kaplan's idea. So yeah, she's like, oh, snap. Yeah, this isn't a good thing. Who else will he? If he's going to take out Kaplan, I think she should be worried about if he's going to take out Kaplan, who else will he take out? Mm-hmm. And if Kaplan was someone close to him, like, is he really interested in me or could he be looking to take me out or take Agnes out or take Tom out or whatever? So that's where I would be questioning. I'd be like, is anybody really safe? And that's why I need to keep tabs on him to find out what his next move is.
All right. Now we get to move on to Red and Dembe. Those are the final two. Red plays with Jeffrey and Aniko. Did I say that right?
Aniko.
Yeah, Aniko. About cobalt mines. He does this while he's setting up a fantastic new apartment that is 100% all white, which, seriously, people, never get an apartment that's all white. That's just begging for trouble. Love the wine back and forth. I thought that was really funny.
Can't he just drink it in the kitchen? I could drink it in the kitchen.
That was like back, like I said, that was back to classic Red. I mean, he was just going about his business. But he plays these two against each other, Jeffrey and Aniko, and ends up taking them both out. It turns out as revenge for killing his friend. What do you think about this? I mean, Red really isn't a factor in the Blacklister this week. It's really this subplot. So what do you think about the subplot?
Can I just say again, passport to foreshadowing?
In terms of how? What do you mean?
You get the master and the grunt, for lack of a better term, and he's playing the two against each other in order to take over the business. Isn't that not what he's trying to do to – not that, not maybe overtly trying to do to Dembe, but at the same time, the parallelism of that, right, is there. That he's doing something that's pissing Dembe off enough that he might go up against his boss by putting, you know, him and Kaplan together in his mind, and that's exactly what happens, is that he potentially might be betraying his boss at the end of the day. So love the parallelism between the two of those stories.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it as a metaphor, I suppose. But don't you also see it as Dembe seems very concerned about his behavior, and I'm trying to understand really what the big deal was. I mean, he was upset that his friend was murdered here and betrayed, so it's kind of like a revenge thing. I don't get why Dembe had such an issue with it.
I think he had more of an issue with the cleaner's end of it than he did with the actual what was going on between Aniko and Jeffrey.
What do you mean? You mean it was more about getting them?
Yeah, so I think that when Red came to the apartment, he came to the apartment obviously to see where his friend was killed, realized that the cleaners did such a good job, and because of that, he's going to now need a set of cleaners himself, so he's going to hire cleaners to replace Kate. I think that part of it is what Dembe was probably more upset with, doing the Aniko versus Jeffrey thing, and Dembe was in on that, handing him the gun and everything with the blanks.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think Dembe was fine with that whole thing about trying to get the cobalt mines. The question now becomes, why did he want the cobalt mines? Did he want them so he could actually hold up to his friend's word and free everybody so it wasn't on the backs of slaves and prostitution and whatever? Or does he really want a piece of the enterprise? And maybe that's the part that Dembe can't see in Red. He doesn't know if he's doing it for the right reasons, the wrong reasons, the business reasons, etc. And so when Dembe can't read Red, that scares Dembe.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know if I agree with you on that. I think he was very clear in his mission, which was he is sickened by how they operate, how Aniko and Jeffrey both operate, and also wanted revenge for his friend getting killed in this bitchin' pad. So But we do get to meet the new CSI cleaners, and I really like these guys. I thought they were hysterical, and just I like them as additions. But I also wonder, you know, what's going to happen when Kaplan comes back? Does that mean, you know, she's got to earn her job back, or is she going to be the person that goes up against Red, like you said, or we said, or I said, or do you, you know, what part are they going to play? Do you think they have a part going down the road? I really like these guys.
Yeah, I thought they were a lot of fun, especially Fudo. Fudo was really funny. Just, you know, really cool facial expressions, really cool one-liners. I think that he's someone that would actually be around. And then the fact that they're actual just moonlighting cleaners and then they work for the Metro PD as crime scene cleanup people, I think that's interesting because then we can actually have Red play into that a little bit with other things going around in the metro area that he can use to enhance his syndicate, his empire here on the local scale. So I think that really adds some fun to the story. I think the interactions between Fudo and Sakia, would with Dembe, I think that's going to be an interesting dynamic between that trio.
I like how Red wouldn't answer Liz. Hey, who are those guys? What's going on with these guys? And he's like, I'm just going to keep talking. We're just going to pretend like you're not asking me questions. That was good. I like that.
I liked it.
Yes, and that's what happened with Red this episode. It was a really interesting twist. I kind of was wondering throughout the episode where this was going, and then you kind of get to the midpoint, and you're like, okay, so he's playing these two against each other, and what the benefit was. Maybe the Cobalt Mines are going to come back into play at some point, maybe not. Maybe it really was just revenge. We'll find out, I think, later on.
But what does he gain? What does he gain from the Forecaster, though? That's the of course the big question. If the blacklist is all this,
there's no. Well, that's how you interpret the blacklist. I don't think necessarily. Maybe
they're just show titles now, and it doesn't mean anything.
Well, every episode is a little different. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
So maybe the Forecaster will come back into play down the road, and then it will have relevance. And he did say that he had dealings, or he had the option to deal with him, but he doesn't do any business dealings where he can't control the outcome. So that's why he doesn't deal with him. But, you know, maybe ultimately the blacklist is really people that are in Liz's way. I don't know.
Or maybe it's just a foreshadowing line. Like he said, where I can't control the outcome. Well, now he controls the outcome of the mines, so he can do what he needs to do because he would never be a partner with somebody. And maybe that partnership concept is what we're really working with for the rest of this 7 episodes.
Maybe it's forecasting. Maybe that's what it is, Troy.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Dembe, man, because that was a sidestep I didn't see coming. Took me by surprise. He shows up at Liz's apartment. He's obviously very irritated with Red. You see that throughout the episode. He has an issue with how disrespectful he is to Kate's memory. He's done that in a couple episodes previously, but it's always been like a toss-away line here or there. And he obviously resents his part in her death. And then when he shows up at Liz's door with the truth that Red killed Kate, I debated, isn't this the same kind of betrayal that Kate also had with Red? I mean, it's very similar. I mean, he's basically telling, I know what he's doing it with the best intentions, but so is Kate.
Right, exactly. I've always looked out for what's your best interest, what you've always said, protect Liz. Dembe's is, I have to make sure that I do everything you ask and make sure that you stay alive and your business stays operational and I owe you my life because you've been like a father because you saved me from the Mabasa cartel. And it really an internal struggle for him in order to go up against Red. So the character development here is going to be fantastic to see how much more Dembe struggles with this as we go on. And will he become more of a prominent character in this third of the season? Not that he wasn't a prominent character before, but more screen time and more lines, etc. So I think that it's going to be really interesting to see how he struggles with this and where he will, how far will he go? Where will he cross the line? And does he think he's crossing the line even though he's doing exactly what Kate did?
He sure is. That's the way I see it. That's why we asked the profiling question is what he did an act of betrayal? And telling Liz, well, how do you feel about that? Do you feel like he does seem only concerned with Liz and Agnes right now?
Well, it's all he's ever been concerned with, and it seems like he'd take out anybody as long as if they impacted the safety of Liz and Agnes in any way, shape, or form, right?
So why is this different? It just doesn't feel that different to me, I guess.
Maybe because of he's doing things that, and this goes back into the question of how does this relate to the Blacklister of the week? So is he doing things that aren't specifically related to helping further the Red Liz agenda storyline? He was just like, you know what? Someone killed my friend. I'm just going to take him out. Maybe that's not behavior that's happened before in the relationship between Red and Dembe, or at least Dembe doesn't know about those dealings if they happen. It almost seems like he's going rogue or just taking people off the map or something. Yeah, with you know, he technically owns part of the cabal or runs the cabal or however we want to remember how that all went down. And maybe there's just some things like this wasn't part of the plan. Maybe because remember, he knows the whole story.
Yeah.
So maybe there's something that's side rail from that.
I like his development. I do. I think it's pretty cool to put Dembe up against his boss. And I think that'll play out really, really intriguingly. But I also, there's part of me as a viewer that goes, man, I really just don't think he's doing things that different. I mean, I don't think Red's acting that out of the ordinary. I think he's pretty much just doing what the character's always done. You know, telling fun stories, killing criminals. That's what he does. And maybe there's more to it. Maybe that's going to lead somewhere and they're going to go a little deeper into it. I assume that's what they're doing. But as of right now, I don't see a whole lot that would prompt that other than maybe it's just Dembe's guilt that's killing him.
Right. And then it goes to the thing of, you know, the Liz saying, you made your own choice and made your own decisions without consulting me. You know, and maybe it's playing off that. The people that, the whole thing about it was, maybe it was Naomi that said it back in season two, but, you know, the people that get involved with Reddington's, you know, dealings and circles always have something bad happen to them, or, you know, trouble always follows Reddington kind of thing. And maybe that's just, this is the next person that trouble's going to follow is Dembe Zuma.
Man, do you like this development?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. The thing that was really interesting.
Give me a dollar.
You got it.
Give me a dollar.
That's two. The thing that was interesting about the scene, though, was he comes to the apartment. One, well, can I see your apartment? No, you can't. Someday. So how does Dembe know where the apartment is? So one, Dembe's a creeper, too, following Liz home or going to the same grocery store.
I think they knew where it was.
Maybe.
It wasn't a matter of not knowing where the apartment, because remember earlier in the episode, he said, I can have people outside your door in an hour. I think he knows where it is. It's just a matter of he's not invited in.
So now he's being respectful and staying away?
I think she didn't give him an option. I think she was very clear with that.
Yeah. Okay. So he shows up and then like, hey, you want to come in? And he's like, uh-uh. And then they go outside into the hallway and she kind of closes the door. Does Dembe not trust Tom? Does he think that if stuff gets to Tom, maybe it gets back to Red. Maybe Tom's still working for Red. Because remember,
No. I think that's part of it because she did offer to let Dembe come in, right? She was fine with Dembe.
Yeah.
She has no problem with him. I think Dembe didn't want Tom to hear.
Right.
He wanted, yeah. So yeah, I just don't think he wanted to talk to Liz in private. I don't think it was anything specific. It wasn't like he doesn't want Tom to hear anything. Da 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 da. I think it was just, he wants to talk to Liz alone. Whatever she does with that information is on her.
Okay.
That's what I got out of it.
I don't know. Tom just always seemed a little shady, and we never know who actually did take a shot at him, too, from the Vanessa Cruz episode. So I'm curious how Tom plays into all this and the fact that Tom is going to the spinoff. It seems like there's just something bigger with Tom's character.
There will be. I think I 100% think there will be. So there you go. You can have a dollar back.
There you go.
I think that's about it for this episode, man.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of we've still got more show left, but that's in terms of the characters and whatnot, I think we covered it.
Yeah. It was really, again, really entertaining, really enjoyable. Just to, you know, it was fun. I think that's the thing. It was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have to sit there and you go, oh, creepy, gross, weird, strange, whatever. It was enjoyable and everybody's like, yeah, rah, rah kind of feel to it, which was really great.
Yeah, and I really dug the hitman running over there and knocking poor Ram out. Poor guy, never had a chance. He's never going to be a field agent. So it was a lot of cool moments in this episode. I really enjoyed it. It was a blast. One of my favorites of the season by far.
Easily.
But the show's not over, so don't go anywhere. Please remember to download the Blacklist Exposed app for iOS and Android, and be sure to go even deeper into the mystery of Red Reddington by visiting our partner Blacklist site, theblacklistnbc.com. We will be right back with Red's Rhetoric right after this. Are you sick of the endless, poorly realized remakes as we are? Then take a listen to Remake This Movie Right, where we take a classic movie, figure out what works and what doesn't, throw a dash of humor at it, and then we craft our own remake. So by the end of every episode, we will remake this movie right. Recently featured as a podcast to listen to by the AV Club, you can find us at RemakeThisMovieRight.com or your podcast app of choice. Every movie you love will get a remake someday, and only you can make it better.
Welcome to Red's Rhetoric, that part of the show where we play two scenes from this week's episode and then you get to vote. When I remember to put up the poll over at theblacklistexposed.com, just look for the post for the forecaster. Last week, it's clear we have some comedians among us, as you thought that the two fish names were funny as well. Red Trout won last week with 82% of the vote. Our first clip comes this week when Red chats with Jeffrey about his paranoia.
The mining deal is closed.
You sound surprised.
And you look scared.
Inigo completed financing without consulting me. And now he's not returning my calls.
Perhaps he has a new acolyte or grew wary of your ambition.
I've given him no reason to be.
Others might have. People hoping to gain his trust by betraying you.
I haven't done anything.
But you're here. So you want to.
If he suspects me.
Oh, please spare me the wide-eyed innocence. You're the top aide to a man who pays your salary with the lives of women and children. You're every bit as responsible for committing atrocities as he is. Cheer up, Jeffrey. This isn't the end, it's the beginning. Your beginning. One you need to announce loudly enough to scare off other pretenders to the throne. Might I suggest something in broad daylight? Perhaps a nice car bombing. A cliche, I know, but cliches work. That's how they get to be cliches.
The second comes when Red tells Inigo about his diamond mined friend.
I once bankrolled a diamond mine outside Tsikapa. One day a man showed up alone, unarmed, started to talk to me about the mine. I had guns and guards and an enterprise worth, $150 million. He had nothing but a story about greed, driving atrocities and conflict, about armed groups using mass rape and mutilation as a means to control people in the villages around the mines. I had bullets, he had words. But when he was done talking, for the first time, I truly understood which of those was more powerful. I abandoned the mine, agreed to finance his campaign of protection and protest, and did so until 2 months ago, when you had him murdered.
Cyrus Choix.
He was a good man. And my friend. And somehow your cleaners removed even the memory of his blood from this carpet.
They are the best in the business.
They better be.
Which was your favorite? If you are ready to make your statement, vote hashtag red cliche. Or if you think words are more powerful than guns, vote hashtag red friend.
Hey, this is Amir. I play Aram on The Blacklist, and you are listening to The Blacklist Exposed.
All right, so let's go see what all of you special agents thought of this week's episode. You ready?
Ready.
Somya thought the episode was awesome. The Blacklist got its swag back. Too much excited for next episode.
Yeah. Priscilla said, well, wasn't expecting Dembe to go on and do that. I hope we see Kaplan on the next episode. She was mentioned quite a bit on this episode, so probably will.
Yeah, she's probably still driving around.
I'm going to say probably not. It'll be a while.
You don't think so?
It'll be a while yet.
You don't think so? I don't know. I don't watch previews, so I will find out when the episode airs.
I did not watch the preview this week.
Good for you. I'm proud of you.
I know.
You're finally coming around.
I actually had the remote on the table this time, so it helped.
You like quick draw McGraw with that thing? Matthew says, hell yeah, I've been missing Kaplan a great deal. I love her character, and I really love the interaction between her and Red. I really want to see what she's been up to. Well, mostly whistling through her cheek. That's what I would guess.
Whoa, too soon.
Too soon?
Too soon. Right. Marilyn said, so I guess we know Aram's career started as a child investigating the disappearance of his beloved pet.
Damn right. I've been there. I've been there, man. I feel you.
Love this episode. Red's back with a vengeance, reminiscent of the episode Alistair Pitt, with a little Mombasa cartel mixed in. And a quick flash of Hitchcock's Rear Window. Loved it.
Just so you know, Marilyn, Rear Window, my favorite movie of all time. True story. Because it's the best movie ever made, in case you haven't seen it. Troy, have you ever seen Rear Window?
And because you're a creeper, that's why.
Yeah, well, that too. And, you know, have you ever seen Rear Window?
Long time ago. Not any time recently.
Were you a fan?
Yeah, it was a good movie. Yeah.
It was a good movie.
Yeah,
best movie of all time, and it was a good movie.
Oh, it's not the best movie of all time. For you, it's the best movie of all time.
For America, it's the best movie of all time. Ella says, this episode was awesome. I loved it. Definitely set up the rest of the season, and I'm curious to see how Liz will act around Red now and how their relationship might change. Aram was great as always, but to me, Dembe was the star of the episode, which is funny because he's only in it for like 3 minutes total. He's always looking out for Red no matter what he does. I noticed that he said some stuff about Red to Liz that was similar to what Odette said about Kirk. They both said that they no longer recognize their bosses and how they've changed. I hope Red doesn't end up in the same situation as Kirk. The whole diorama thing was really cool and reminded me of Criminal Minds. Now my wish is that Tom would hurry up and leave for redemption. Wow.
There's a large contingency that do not like Tom.
I think it's the relationship. I don't think it's so much Tom. I just think it's, you know, they're still not okay with them to get together.
Yeah, it is.
What it is.
That's interesting.
What do you think about that?
Parallelism, yeah.
Yeah.
Go back to the painting, right, with Liz standing over Reddington's grave. I think that's a really great observation. His obsession with Liz may lead to his undoing. It's very possible. I like it. I like it a lot.
His undoing would make the show canceled. So let's not get completely undone.
Wouldn't that be we're waiting for like, oh, what's the connection between the two of them? And the connection is that I'm your killer, and bam, Red's in the ground for the finale.
What do you mean that I'm your killer?
That's the connection. I'm the one that killed you. Like Liz kills Red.
That would be a cool ending, I think.
That would be a really cool ending.
You never know. You never know what they're going to do, man, so keep it open.
Yep, yep, yep. Anita said, I really don't like these new cleaners. This smells like a trap to me. It's a trap. Red better be careful.
It's a trap.
Red better be careful. Maybe Kaplan saves him from them. And I'm like, oh, and then Neil said, they did say that things didn't end well for their two previous employers. It's kind of an ominous statement.
It is ominous, but let me ask you, Anita. You don't like them? I thought they were cool as hell.
I think
they're great.
I think they're cool. I think she's saying that she doesn't like them because they may be part of Red's undoing. Not that they actually will, because Red's smarter than that.
Could be, but I like Fudok because he seemed like real sarcastic, and I like that in a guy.
It seems like him and Red could have some comedic, you know, tosses back and forth.
Banter is what the word you're looking for.
Yes, thank you. Yes, yes. I was thinking bantha. That's why I couldn't get it out.
Too much Star Wars in your life?
It's a trap.
Paula said, okay, so you run after a bad guy and leave your baby in the apartment with the door wide open. Dad of the Year award. Good Lord. I'm with you, man. As soon as he did that, I'm like, all right, take his child away. Call DCFS or something. Dembe must be scared if he told Liz about Red. I'm trying to decide if I'm happy or sad about that.
Well, you got all week to talk about the question of the week, because that's exactly how we feel, too.
Yep.
Linda said, first thoughts, seriously, with the life Liz and Tom have, you get a knock on the door and one, there's no peephole or some electronic means of seeing the hallway. Thank you, Linda. Two, you don't say, who is it? And three, you open the door and then I've always believed there is way more of a backstory to Tom and Red. Dembe doesn't go in to talk to Liz, Tom. See, Linda and me are like channeling here. Dembe doesn't go in to talk to Liz, Tom, only to Liz in hushed tones. Does that indicate that he knows anything said to Tom gets back to Red or used against Red?
If that were the case, to me, he would have had to say, you can't say anything to Tom, and he didn't do that.
Right. Don't let Tom know.
Yeah, to me, that's what would have to happen. So I don't think that's the case. My personal opinion. Nate, after a slow mid-season opener, I was expecting an action-packed second episode. After having a tall glass of chocolate milk, I realized we got a very cerebral episode that I thought was just okay and another piece of the puzzle for where the rest of the season is headed. This week's Blacklister was very blah, very ordinary, but it was a twist of how the FBI was going to catch him that got me excited for the episode until the cat and mouse game fizzled, then the psychic game ran out of phone minutes only to be added to a radio frequency issue. Mm-hmm. Ran out of fun? I don't know. I was so bummed with that. I did, however, enjoy Red's tortured soul storyline, though. Did anyone feel that Red was setting up a parable of how he felt when he was betrayed by Kaplan and how he should be punished for murdering her? Oh. Is Red going down a dark path? Sure. He's a criminal mastermind. What do you expect? He's preparing for the upcoming war and eliminating anyone who could stand in his way. It looks like Liz's thank you tour will end after finding out about Mr. Kaplan.
Parable. It's interesting.
I kind of like that parable. That maybe, yeah, maybe he killed him out of guilt.
It's possible. Man, that's really good. I got to ponder on that a little bit more. Annalise said, there's one thing that I don't understand. What made Red go so nuts? What triggered it? Was it when Liz shot Connolly and became like him? His behavior goes back to the Vem, right after Liz got the deal signed. After he found out Liz was pregnant, could this be when it happened? Could it be history repeating? He's slowly going down the dark path. I understand he's very afraid to lose Liz and now Agnes, but why now?
Dun, dun, dun. Because he thinks he's in the... I don't know. I think we're going to find out more as we go. What do you think about...
Well, it's a control issue. I think it's... Does he have control? You know, Liz did this thing to him. Kaplan did this thing to him. He couldn't protect her. So because he's trying to control stuff, and by trying to control stuff, he may be going too quickly, trying to execute plans that really aren't supposed to be executed, because he just feels like he's spinning, so he has to try to grab onto something that he can put right back in the universe.
I think if you've ever dealt with a control freak in your life, the more control you lose, the more you try to take.
Yes.
So you end up overcompensating for that. And I think that's where he's at currently, personally. I think he has no control. And, you know, for a while, in terms of the show, I struggled with the idea that he was okay with not being part of Liz's life for most of her life. And now he can't leave her side, you know, which made no sense for a while. But now I think because he's made himself known and he's made himself part of her life, now he refuses to leave it, even if it would make her life easier. And it's definitely control freak. He wants her to respect him and she doesn't. And he's trying to force the issue. He keeps forcing the issue. He can't do anything. So now he's lashing out. It's a control thing. I think the more you lose, the more you want and the harder you fight for it.
Agree.
Boom. Well, I think it's going to do it, man. This is going to conclude this episode. So be sure to follow us on Twitter at @TheBlacklistGSM, where we live tweet during the East Coast feed, and we use the show's hashtag, TheBlacklist.
Yeah, don't forget to follow us on Tumblr, Instagram, and join the Facebook group. Just search for The Blacklist Exposed. Talk about the show, the podcast, or pictures. Share them of your latest clay creation.
You can also subscribe to the podcast in iTunes or just listen from the website. But if you're really on the go, make sure you download our app for iOS or Android powered by Spreaker. You can also find all the intel and analysis about this episode for The Forecaster by visiting theblacklistexposed.com. Once again, big thanks for listening, guys. We always do appreciate it. Please don't forget to answer our profiling question. Was Dembe's decision an act of betrayal?
It's kind of a yes or no answer, but we'll see what people say. Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's @TroyHeinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, about.me/TroyHeinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter @H_Outsider. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the Blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.